If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch livecasts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post-pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Travis, do you think the best way to combat declining interest in a show is to spend 3 hours telling viewers that the show sucks and then headlining with the guy who you say is the cause of the show sucking lately? I thought that was quite the interesting strategy.
This was one of maybe counterintuitive kind of episodes of Raw in a lot of ways. I don't know what was going through the minds of the people, and by people I mean Vince McMahon. What's going through his head when he decided to, you know, acknowledge what's been, you know, the kind of the critical mass that was reached last week, to acknowledge the critical mass, but whine like a baby and put it all on someone else, and then to give us this episode, which in some ways I thought with the interviews and the promos and the interviews backstage and interviews in ring were good. But like you said, it was we built up to a really good match, a good quality main event, really good. But I don't know, Wade. It was odd in a lot of aspects.
It was. I felt at times it was a poorly planned show. I felt like they wrote a 2-hour script and then realized, oh, this is a 3-hour show. We got a lot of long recap packages, and it seemed like at the end of the second hour, it seemed like maybe it was planned, or maybe the show was running short, and they just decided to give us a 7-minute recap of everything that happened in the previous 2 hours, making those who tuned in think, oh, that was kind of foolish of me. I could have tuned in now and caught up on the relevant stuff. That was weird, and then they did some more of that, too. It was a strange show. I didn't think there was a ton. It wasn't as densely packed as I think you would want an episode of Raw to be. What'd you think of the payoff at the end, though, just in terms of the length and quality of the Corbin-Seth match?
It was good. It was. I assumed Seth was going to lose. I thought they were going to continue with the, you know, Seth pops off and, hey, let's do this tonight. Yeah. And he loses his title on TV. And I thought, because if they did that, I said, oh, well, they can still have the match with Dean, no title. Dean will probably can win that and you know, not have to win the Intercontinental title. So I was, I talked to myself early after the exchange, the opening exchange with Seth and Baron is going, okay, well, at the end of the night, Baron Corbin's going to be the Intercontinental Champion. But so that was pleasantly a nice surprise at the end when Seth won the way he did. Really dramatic. I love Heath Slater's involvement and everything around that. So solid.
Yeah, I thought that the announcing, and this is just watching a lot of WWE over the decades, gave away each time that the match was about to end, that it wasn't going to end. When there's, and I hate to, you know, say there is no Santa to WWE fans, but when there's a ref bump, and then you're watching what looks like a finish of a match, and the ref bump has not come into play yet, it's not the finish. So that was a little bit of a tell. And then
also the camera shots.
In what way?
The tight camera shot on someone climbing, so you can't see as a viewer who's running in the ring. And you have to pay attention to the crowd, because the announcers aren't going to give it away because they're looking at their monitors. They see what you see.
Ostensibly, yes.
So you have to, you know, listen to the oohs and ahs and the watch out that you get from the crowd. So again, you all that gives you a feeling of, oh, this the heart rate, that can come down because this isn't going to be – he's not going to grab it here.
And the other thing is the announcers are talking about Seth Rollins retaining his title despite the odds. This is great. Now he has a chance to defend it against Dean, and he hasn't grabbed the belt yet. So you know he's not going to, because announcers don't talk about the end of a match accurately before the finish, because that would be anticlimactic. So all the cliches, all the things that Vince does so predictably in his clever reverse psychology that hasn't been clever for 30 years kind of came into play. Same thing with Baron Corbin. This is an injustice. This has to stop. It's like he hasn't grabbed the belt yet. You guys are talking like he did, so now we know he won't. That aside, and it's not nitpicking, because really I think more people than just me have caught on to this, and it's a little heavy-handed, or ham-fisted, I guess would probably be the term for it. So I'd like to have them clean that up, but I think the match had good action and was a good way to tease, more than tease, I mean, but, you know, give a good dose of what is coming up on Sunday when Seth and Dean face off, and then there's some TLC matches in the mix, including the women's match. There was a lot of hype for TLC, which made me think, boy, it sure is better when there's more viewers, not fewer viewers. Because I hear the sort of ludicrous argument, well, they get the same money either way, so who cares? It's like, no, the show is still a promotion vehicle to make money in other ways. And with these record low ratings, fewer people are seeing these plugs for TLC is free if you're a new subscriber and getting people excited about it. I think the line that surprised me the most, though, Travis, and sort of we already covered it a little bit in broad terms, is they literally acknowledged, Seth acknowledged in his State of Raw address at the beginning, that Raw has been drawing all-time low ratings. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, if you're drawing all-time low ratings, there's a malaise among even people watching. And what you want to do is get them excited about the product. And the way to do that is to do what you have the power to do. You're not journalists. You can actually spin. And what you should do is celebrate record YouTube viewership. You should celebrate last week SmackDown. Don't say that it was the lowest rated SmackDown ever. Say it was the number one show on cable television last Tuesday. Talk about a 25-week streak of Raw being in the top five shows on all of cable on Monday nights. Spin it in your favor, and then say there's too many good things happening here for Baron Corbin to continue to put it at risk. Like, there's a way to frame it where you're being honest, you're putting out real facts, you can still make Corbin the villain and the heel who's putting at risk this, but you get to tell a story that your viewers can believe in. The vast majority of viewers are not going to PWTorch.com every midweek trying to see where the ratings are. They're not listening to this podcast, hearing us talk on the flagship about the all-time low ratings. So I was surprised they acknowledged it. They have no obligation to be honest in that way. And then they blame Baron Corbin for Drake Maverick peeing his pants and peeing on Bobby Roode's robe.
Yeah.
Like, that was just utterly stupid. How do you blame the general manager? You know, they're basically saying Corbin ruined this show because he became head writer. And he's putting this stuff in scripts. And then to blame him for favoring Lucha House Party over the Revival and have Seth come to the Revival's defense? That was just – the logic was thrown out the window. I was just shaking my head watching that going, this doesn't even, I mean, I kind of see what they're doing and I don't agree with it, but at least do it well. And it just lacked any logic. And I think someone's going, why is Corbin favoring Lucha House Party over the Revival? And why is Seth in favor of the Revival? And what did Baron Corbin have to do with Drake Maverick peeing? Like, I just, none of it made any sense. And it's bad television. The reason people aren't watching Raw or so many people are turning out is because it's a poorly written show. And that segment was an example of it's just not making any sense. And when it doesn't make sense, it doesn't connect with viewers and they don't get invested and everything unravels.
Yeah, they're trying to be WWE. He's trying to be himself. He's trying to be Vince and do his stuff, but also acknowledge the obvious. But like you said, it's only obvious, and it's that audience bigger. It's as big as it is. It's still a small percentage of your general and wide audience. Right. So why are you talking directly to the internet, to people like, you know, this show in the East Coast cast with the headline last week, with something in the episode about like record ratings low, and this week it's going to be, you know, Vince McMahon blames, you know, makes Baron Corbin take the brunt of his nonsense.
Yeah.
But again, he was trying to do acknowledge. But when you acknowledge in this half-ass, this whack-ass way that. And then you still do the things that harm you and give that uproar. You know, that's worse than just doing the bad thing when you acknowledge, yeah, I know, I'm terrible, but I'm still going to do this.
I know. Yes.
That's the part that gets me.
Yeah. All right, we got a lot more to talk about regarding today's show. You can join us. Our phone number here is 347-215-8558. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. I'm Wade Keller, and I'm joined by Travis Bryant as co-host today. He is the host of the PW Torch East Coast cast. Travis, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Wade.
How can people find your show, listen to your show live or on demand?
They can find us at eastcoastcast.com. We're on live every Wednesday night, 6:30 Eastern. So eastcoastcast.com. You can get all the information, social media, how to find us, how to call us and tweet us and email us and all those good things. Leave a voicemail, eastcoastcast.com.
Cool. What do you do on the show?
Oh, we do a bunch of things. We talk about wrestling and life and politics and raise hell and all kinds of shenanigans, and it's viewer discretion is advised. So drop the kids off first and then hit play on the East Coast cast. So yeah, every Wednesday, 6:30 Eastern, live, taking your calls, eastcoastcast.com. Check us out.
And then 95% or 99% of people listen on demand at Apple Podcasts, wherever. Just search PW Torch East Coast Cast or East Coast Cast. I'm sure it'll pop up and you can subscribe and listen on delay there if you can't listen. If you can't actually join them live, you can listen the next day on demand. Well, we had Ronda Rousey and Nia Jax. They advertised a face-off. And Jax talked for 5 minutes. And then Ronda Rousey came out and said, I'm not here to talk. Or strike my poses, which was a little inside baseball. And she goes, I'm here to fight. Runs in the ring. Jax and Tamina leave. They cut to a break. And they come back. And we get Tamina versus Ember Moon. Yay, they didn't bother mentioning that. I think they thought maybe it would be a good to give Ronda a week off from alienating fans with goofy, quirky, oddball scripted promos. I don't know.
She just does it on Twitter, and she's a complete jerk and out of touch and completely oblivious and misses the point and doesn't get things. So it's good that it's not on TV, but on Twitter she's still a real piece of work.
Yeah, elaborate on that a little bit. What's she been doing on social media?
She gets destroyed every time she tries to have one of her long, like, Becky Lynch and her avocado toast and her, you know, she's just jealous. She's mad she doesn't have a penis, and she tries to get provocative, and Becky Lynch destroys her over and over again. And in the comments, the people following those threads, it's never I'm sure there are, but it's 95, you know, 99 to 1 of people that are like, damn, oh my God, Becky, you rock, Ronda, you suck. And then maybe somebody like, you know, give Ronda a break, guys. And she's the, you know, it's like as far as social media wins goes, it's knockouts every time, every time. And Ronda just comes back and over with her long soliloquies and her bullcrap Instagram posts, and Becky and everybody's there to shut her down. And Becky even oh my goodness, what she did to Charlotte last week with the I missed one show for this, and Charlotte missed a whole month for something I can't remember. And the this was Becky's bloody face, and the something I can't remember was a shot of Charlotte's midsection or upper midsection, just her big old boob sitting there. And it was great. Becky, just don't go at Becky Lynch on Twitter. I advise that for everybody listening. but back to Ronda and Raw. I guess giving her a night off was fine, sort of. You know, she got to come out, and she didn't strike her poses, but she got to be seen. I thought Nia Jax had a good promo, good go-home money promo, going into as a challenger, big heel, as a challenger for a title. That was more than serviceable. Like, I thought it was even good, even.
I think so, too. I think I praise Nia more than most. I don't know if I don't know why. You know, I mean, I think she does a better job than some people where I get some pushback on it. But are usually with her, or do you think she's usually pretty bad and this was an exception? Or do you think she's been improving and this was
She's been improving. On mic, she's gotten her facials. You've gotten over that. Oh, she has such a pretty face, and can we take her seriously as a heel? Like, that was a thing at one point, so that we're well past that. And she's just connecting with her words. It doesn't feel like, you know, she's gotten good at not feel like she's saying someone else's words.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, let's take a couple calls here. If you want to get on board on the call bank, just give us a call, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You've got to push 1 on your keypad or your touchtone phone if you're calling us from 1989, and we would welcome you on the show. But you got to push 1 in order to move into the caller queue. All right, let's go to 706 first. 706, thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, good to see you again. Brandon from Athens, Georgia. I thought Raw was a lot better than the last 2 weeks because the bar was set so low. I thought the main event was a great TV match. And I'm going to ask you guys something that you haven't covered yet. What was either one of your guys' opinion on the Ruby Riott Natalya promo?
What'd you think, Travis?
I thought it was intense. I think Ruby Riott has it. I pay attention to everything she's a part of now because she's got my antenna up, and this was good in her execution and all that. With the Jim Neidhart stuff and the imagery, and I don't think it's as tasteless as maybe some people might think. It's like, I didn't do anything too gratuitous. Yes, she's making fun of, or she's poking at, you know, somebody's dad dying. But I really do think if Natalya had issue with this, like she wouldn't allow this to be done. Like really, I think she's okay enough, like in the power structure and all that. She was just like, nah, I don't, you know. So that doesn't bother me. It was fine. It was fine. And I really liked Ruby Riott's part in it. I liked her execution.
I thought it was a little creepy. I wasn't offended. But I'm not sure that there's anywhere in real life where bad people use dead fathers to get under the skin of their daughters. I mean, maybe I just don't watch enough like daytime, like television or something, but it feels like a little heavy handed, a little trashy, maybe to a little exploitative and all that. But it wasn't like, I didn't see it as a high crime as much as it was sort of like, I just kind of shifted in my chair a little bit, going, "Oh God, I don't know about this." As opposed to, "Oh, that Ruby ride! I can't wait for Natalya to get her hands on her." It's brave when you ask Natalya, you know, to stand mid ring and carry a segment. They just haven't done that a lot with her, and you don't know how the fans are going to react. But I think she's got goodwill with the fans. They see her as, you know, a genuine wrestling family female wrestler who's had some good matches in NXT and all that. So I thought, given that combined with the gravity of talking about her dad and I think not asking her to act as much, like, I don't think she got worked up about the sunglasses. I think she did feel real emotions saying his name on television. I think people would have connected with her in that way. So I don't know if that helps or hurts, because it makes what Ruby said seem more exploitative, because Natalya was having, I think, a genuine emotional moment in the ring talking about her dad, and that's where it sort of feels like it's exploitative. So if I'm WWE, I just like take after Saudi Arabia and Roman Reigns and dismemberment and, you know, on and on. I just like take a 3-month break. I just hire someone for like, I do like just take an ad out and just say, I want, if are you someone who all your friends say is too pure and too PC? Well, would you like a job for 3 months? Because we need some help over here. And then just run everything by that person and let them veto everything that offends them a little bit or makes them think it's not tasteful. Just give us 3 months without having to like slice and dice or worry.
They're going
about
the other way, though. I've noticed that they're doing some raunchier, kind of edgier things. I mean, the whole, you know, it was, you know, started, maybe not started, but when Drake Maverick, you know, peed on himself and then the next night or two, a week or two later, you know, that's when it really like kind of hit me like, oh,
is that edgy or juvenile though? Like,
it's totally like juvenile. And I was going to say Vince scatological stuff. That's right in his wheelhouse, but they stayed away from a lot of that stuff. So it's kind of, that's when, you know, they're trying to, you know, push, you know, his version of pushing the edge, like, you know, pee and poop jokes. But they have been just the tone of some things, they've had some people say some pretty scathing kind of stuff. But back to Natty. I thought tonight should have been the night where she, when that table got bought out, like, let Ruby finish, but her emotions on her face, I just thought weren't enough. Like, you're upset and you're sad. Like, the sunglasses thing where she, like, oh, broke down. That, you know, a couple weeks ago, fine. I get that in the moment. But now you're ready to, like, tear this woman's head off. And then she brings out this table with his image on it. Like, she should have had to be held back from like, Ruby should have been cutting that promo, like, kind of like weary a little bit, like, is she gonna break through those refs? But like, I just thought it was just for Natty to stand in there.
That's a good point.
Ring, kind of just like with the, oh no, she's hurting my feelings again. She's talking about my daddy. It was just like, oh, punch her in the face. She's right there. Like, what are you doing?
No, that's like, that's really
through that table. You got the show. This is the go home show, and you're giving them this big spot. But like, have Natty like almost put her through that table or something, at least.
No, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, I think if your dad recently died and somebody comes out and does what Ruby Riott did, those are fighting words, and just stand in the ring does kind of, I guess, emasculate you a little bit, or I don't know. So, Brandon, you brought it up. What'd you think?
Well, I thought it was a lot better than the glasses. I mean, as far as Natalya's, like, crying goes, I mean, I think she actually, like, conjured up some legitimate tears this time. I mean,
right.
that glasses.
And you know, the thing, I mean, it was a signature look for him and all that, and it was, like, I could imagine, like, if those were, like, the people have different things that trigger memories and all that. It was that they stayed on her so awkwardly long and they didn't build it up enough ahead of time. And Jim Neidhart was a long time ago, you know, like, in terms of like the sunglasses just being like, oh, when I think of Jim Neidhart, I think of the sunglasses. Like, that wasn't really a thing until they drew attention to it for most fans. So it was a fast turnaround to expect people to be super invested and not just look at Natty going, well, it's a plastic pair of sunglasses, and why are you staying on her so long? This is awkward, director. So I don't know, the whole thing was weird. This played better, except for the good point Travis made, which is, you know, why'd she stand there? I mean, charge at her. Brandon, anything else?
Oh, yeah, just one more little bit part about that, and I'll let the next caller come up. I think one of you guys pointed out that Natalia's reaction to Ruby Riott, like, crapping on her father, basically, with a table, was underwhelming. And I think that that's a problem in general, like, across the board with WWE these days. We're like, you know, we've been conditioned as wrestling fans over the years to expect a wrestler to be, like, angry at a certain point because something happened to them. But then they come back the next week or something happened, and they're just kind of nonchalant about that. And it's just like, if you don't care that much, then, like, why should I be invested in this story? And I just think on these days. Anyways, Wade, thanks for taking my call again. And, cool. I'll see you later.
Yeah, call again. Thanks, Brandon.
Hey guys, I don't mean to tear you away for more amazing content that Wade Keller is putting out like he does every single week, but I need to tell you about my podcast. It's Sam Roberts, The Last Professional Broadcaster, and every Thursday morning I bring to you Not Sam Wrestling. The biggest names in the world of professional wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling, whether it's WWE superstars like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, NXT superstars like Shayna Baszler in the Undisputed Era, independent stars like Joey Janela, promoters like Court Bauer. The voices that you want to hear from this world of wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling. Plus, every week, we break down everything that's going on in this world with the State of Wrestling segment, which Wade Keller has joined me on more than a few times. Hey, you can get the podcast every single Thursday morning. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, NotSam.com, and you can go the extra mile. There's bonus shows, there's videos, and it's all available at Patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. However you want to get it, get it. It's Not Sam Wrestling. And now, back to our buddy Wade.
All right, we'll go to 410 next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Reverend Keith, calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Wade and Travis, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight, Keith?
Okay. Well, the first thing I wanted to touch on was what Travis just said in conjunction with the caller, Brandon, who was just on the line about it seems to to all of us that WWE is shying away from the PG era and kind of resorting back to the Attitude Era, not just with the urination, but with a lot of the comments, with what you just said, with the desecration of Natty's father, the late great Jim the Anvil Neidhart, how they've used Roman Reigns' personal illness with the leukemia struggles into the storyline with Dean and Seth. It just seems like they're going backwards instead of forwards.
What do you think, Travis? Because to me, like, the Attitude Era was you can't go back to it because part of what made the Attitude Era work was the 20 years that preceded it.
100 and, years?
I mean, whatever. I'm just thinking, like, the Vince McMahon years.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite 20. But like, it was such a contrast. And then it was Stone Cold and The Rock. Like, you can't go back to the Attitude Era unless Stone Cold and The Rock are not, like, another version of them shows up. So the Attitude Era was not choppy, choppy pee-pee or Sable's cleavage. Like, it was – and then they can't go back to that with – I mean, imagine doing that at this point. Although, you know, Graves gushing over Mandy Rose isn't all that different, I guess. It's just she's not quite as revealing in her outfits. But I don't even know what defines the Attitude Era, but I don't think when people go, they got to go back to the Attitude Era, we need managers peeing their pants and peeing on robes. Like, I don't think that's what – edginess. I don't even think that's what Vince thinks the Attitude Era is. And they've been exploiting deaths constantly. They haven't stopped doing that. Every time there's a death, they exploit it on TV and try to turn it into a storyline and put viewers into the uncomfortable position of trying to decide whether the wrestler participating was forced into it or is agreeable to it.
Like I did 10 minutes ago.
Exactly, yeah. Like, so that never stopped. So I don't even, like, I guess I disagree, Reverend Keith, that like, there's some, I mean, to me, Becky Lynch, just her existence is more, and, you know, her persona, that's more Attitude Era than anything corny that gets scripted into these shows. Travis, your thoughts, and then we'll come back to Keith.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree with a lot of that. I think, obviously, the Attitude Era is this kind of catch-all idea of what it was when you were – whatever, I was 17 to 22, and through that, you know, 97 to 02, whatever, just grab a, you know, few years in there. you know, what it was like at that time for you 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever. So it's not a, it's like you said, it's not choppy, choppy PP. It's not any of that stuff. It was a time. It was an actual era. It's not something that you can just put your finger on and like, oh, that's Attitude Era.
And obviously they're not saying we're PG, so we can't say that anymore, which, by the way, was always incredibly stupid to draw attention to, just like it was, I think, incredibly stupid to go, our ratings are at an all-time low, but thanks for watching, folks. You are the ones who haven't peeled away from this bad product lately. Thanks for your loyalty, and what's wrong with you? I mean, it was just, like, really a weird approach. So they make some weird decisions a lot of the time in their judgment on what to address and talk about on TV. But, Keith, we said a lot about what you said. Now what do you have to say? Any follow-up?
Yes, and I do understand what you and Travis were saying. I wasn't basically saying that, you know, I'm hoping they go back to the Attitude Era, which I hope that they do not. But what I was just saying was, when it comes to exploiting the deaths, they've been doing that for years. You know, we go back to the late, great Eddie Guerrero, and, you know, so many deaths they've exploited. And then just the way, like you said, the silly promos and the silly segments, it just reminds you of that. But you're right. It takes more than just the silly promos. It's a lot of, you know, you had The Rock back then, you had Stone Cold, you had so many others that made that time and era great.
Yeah.
And Keith, the reason that choppy choppy and that kind of stuff got such a pass, like, that stuff was terrible. It doesn't matter because it was 1998 or 99. It was, no, everything in the main event is on fire and they can do really tasteless stuff on the undercard and take risks and be silly and be stupid because look over here, this is where the money is, kind of. So people forget that as well, that they got to do Crash TV because Austin is drawing 6 million people to the screens.
Right. And can I just say one last thing, guys?
Sure.
In defense of the writing team who scripted Seth's promo in segment one, I think they more or less wanted to have him appear as the locker room leader, as he said that Charlie Caruso in the backstage in segment two, you know, when he was mentioning about the revival, about, what Maverick had done.
What they were trying to do.
Go ahead.
It was just, I know we get that. It was just, it's stupid. It's just not a good idea.
The idea is fine. The execution made absolutely no sense. And I have no idea how you can write that down. And there's nobody in that company behind the scenes on the whole writing staff for Vince who goes, wait, in our narrative structure, Baron Corbin is not responsible for what Drake Maverick does. That doesn't make any sense. So somebody needs to go, wait, why is Seth saying that? And the culture within WWE and the writing team is to not notice those things or not bring them up. And that's one of the things that I said a couple weeks ago a week ago when the ratings have been dropping. I'm like, WWE just needs to write better shows. Like, that's one of the solution is Attitude Era or this or that. It's like, just make the show less insulting to people of some level of intelligence and scrutiny when they watch their entertainment. And the standards in WWE are so unnecessarily low. They're inexcusably low when it comes to this kind of internal logic. I didn't even bring this up yet because I was going to save it for our email because we got an email on it. But why are the referees for TLC matches when a referee can be knocked out and the person who rings the bell is in charge of declaring a winner? That totally goes against the whole history of WWE's narrative of why referees are there for matches when someone grabs a belt. Like, they decide where they want to end up and they don't care how they get there, and people get disinvested because they feel insulted by it.
Yeah, there's such an I definitely noticed that, and I said, there's such an easy way, just don't have the bell ring, right? Like, Seth still leaves the IC champion, and now Baron Corbin has something to talk about. But having that bell ring immediately after you look around, like, who rang it? The refs threw in a table or whatever happened to him, super kicked or something. It was the first thing I thought about. And it did a little bit. I mean, that matching the setup and execution and the finish was good. And then they had to end it with something so illogical. Like, that didn't make any sense.
They paint themselves into corners, and then it's like they just give up before they come up with a creative solution. And like, there's actually
they didn't even have to. The solution is to just it's a ladder match. It's in chaos. There's everybody's down. Seth has the belt. It's 10 o'clock. We gotta go.
Yeah, check out. Yeah. And
you know, or Seth's still the champion. Nobody thinks, oh, is he the champion? No, he's a champion. Or it's a no con, whatever. But
Travis. Yeah. Seth just looks at Heath Slater and gives him a threatening look. And then he points up the ladder and says, I'm about to climb that ladder. You better call this finish. And he intimidates the hell out of him. And then he climbs the ladder, grabs a belt, and he looks scared. And then he looks off to the side, and he says, ring the bell.
Like
and
he's looking at Corbin. He's looking at him climb. Yeah. He's looking at Corbin's down body. He's looking up to him. Yeah. Like,
and then Seth can drop down with a belt and say, do you want to stomp or do you want to ring the bell? I mean, there's just whatever. I mean, is it perfect? No, but it's like thousands of light years better than what they did. You know, like, I mean, it's just like there's easy what you said, what I just said, what people listening are probably conjuring up. What they did is like, nobody cares about that stuff. No one's paying attention to those details. You know why no one pays attention to those details? Because people who care about those details stopped watching. You know, so when you think nobody cares about that stuff, nobody remembers that. Nobody cares about that. No, you've driven away everybody who cares about quality writing with integrity and logic. You drove them away. That's why nobody cares about that stuff who's still watching, or the people who are still watching are frustrated and not as supportive as they should be. So anyway, I'm all worked up. Keith, thanks. We got to go. We got to get to our on-site correspondent. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
You
bet.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We'll hit more topics after our conversation with our on-site correspondent, who is standing by in San Diego, the home of zero professional sports teams that can now leave the market, which was kind of a weird thing for Elias to say.
Oh, jeez.
You know, he said, Lashley said that all the teams should leave San Diego. And by the way, Elias, you're going to be in L.A. someday again? So you might not want to, like, rip on the big market. It's like, you know you're on national television, and a lot of people – that's another thing. Like, don't do localized promos where the babyface insults another market. You can compliment Cindy. Anyway, all right, we'll be back. All right, we are back, and we're now joined by Tyler, our on-site correspondent from San Diego tonight. Tyler, thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Oh, dude, thank you so much.
By the way, Travis Bryant still with me as co-host today. Tyler, Travis.
What's up, man?
Hi, Travis.
So, Tyler, let's begin with the crowd. What was attendance like tonight, and how does it compare to other shows you've been to in that building?
So that building is a 12,000 cap room. They had the very top level tarps off in typical WWE TV fashion. I've never been to a show where something wasn't tarped off, but the whole top is tarped off. So I want to estimate then it was between it had to be in the ballpark of 10,000 or close to it if the cap is 12,000.
Okay.
Like they tarped off about 2,000, maybe 3,000 seats. So it might have been just under 10,000 there tonight. But
so pretty full lower deck and a full floor.
Pretty full lower deck. The only part that was empty was so opposite hard cam, same side. I don't know what you refer to what side is, but the side that the hard cam is on that you can't see. That was the only section that had a little bit of emptiness to it. So on the hard cam, I'm sure it was totally full. Just that one section where the hard cam sits.
That's pretty typical.
Had some empty seats, but everything else was full.
How would you evaluate crowd enthusiasm for the show and the product in general? An enthusiastic crowd, or were they a tough crowd?
It was pretty enthusiastic, definitely, especially during the main event.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that. Travis, go ahead and ask another question.
Yeah, did we get any anything? Well, could you tell if we were at commercial? I guess that's probably the first question. But if you knew that they were at a break, was there anything cool or interesting that happened during commercials, during the actual 3-hour show?
Not tonight. I know on some nights there are cool things that happen during breaks. So I was actually at the Survivor Series weekend. I did all four nights 2 weeks ago. And for example, on SmackDown, Paige came out during a break to announce the dark match, which was Bryan versus Miz that night. So that was like really awesome. She came out, did this big announcement. Tonight there was nothing like that, though.
Was there anything? Did Dean and Seth do anything after the stare down and they went off air proper?
No, there was no, not at all, actually. And there was no dark match or anything after we went off TV either.
So it shows over for live fans at that. That's early. That's like 8 o'clock where you are.
I know, which
is weird.
It is weird, but if you remember from the last time we talked, I moved here from Chicago in April, so there's also a part of me that's like, man, it's really nice to get done with this and be home by 10 o'clock and be in bed for Monday morning. Tuesday morning.
Absolutely. When Elias did his bit, he said that Lashley did a radio interview saying he had moved every sports team in San Diego to a cool city like L.A. I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but what sports teams would move now? Like, what does San Diego have?
I don't know. I think he was just taking a dig at the Rams moving. I don't know. But being new to San Diego, I don't think there's anything in San Diego, but there's the Padres. The Padres.
Oh, you're right. Oh, my bad. Has anyone thought of the Padres? Has anyone thought of the Padres outside of San Diego?
That's since Tony Gwynn.
Yeah, sorry. So that's that. I asked honestly because I'm like, am I forgetting something? Because he said, oh, the sports team should move to LA. And I'm like, is there anyone left after the Chargers? So
No, there's the Padres, but I mean, he knows. But I will say that I wrote down a note for this. When as soon as he made the LA comment, even though it's a cheap crowd pop, it was still a crowd pop. The entire arena was booing. It was very akin to Nick Foley, say the name of whatever town you're in and get the cheap. But it worked. It worked. So
who was most over tonight? Who was the most popular? Got the biggest star reactions? Obviously, Seth, Ronda. Who was in that mix?
I'd say, and this is just my opinion, I feel like Seth was number one. He started the show strong. And not only that, normally, the Raw segments at the beginning go long. He started off strong, and they didn't go overly long with that opening promo segment, which was cool. And then during the main event, it was super strong reaction for him. Ronda was up there, not as much as other nights. I can say that only because I've seen her live several times now in the last few months. Seth is the one that stands out. I can't think of anyone that was a standout in terms of during their entrance or anything.
I guess the question then is, who else would it have been? It was Seth and Ronda. I mean, who is the number three babyface on the show? Elias and then Dolph.
Finn wasn't there.
Yeah.
And Dolph had the backstage stuff, and then he had his entrance, but it wasn't anything special. He even said, I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah, so. Way to get momentum off a turn.
For sure, for sure. And I don't even know that you can even call Elias's reactions, like if you're ranking the reactions for the night, I don't know that it's necessarily a reaction or just that we're all participating in his catchphrases.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like we're all yelling, walk with Elias, but we're not when JoJo says, ladies and gentlemen, Elias, there's a little bit of a pop, but it's not this huge pop for just announcing his name. It's not until he gets to his catchphrases.
Yeah. I guess Bailey, maybe is Bailey and Sasha coming out? I mean, how do they rank? By default, number three or four?
That was pretty disappointing, to be honest. I don't think it was that. It wasn't that big. As big as it could have been 6 months ago. And I was your correspondent at the last San Diego show. San Diego show, it was huge.
Wow.
But they've booked that in such a way in the last 6 months where even if they – I feel like even if they try to have Sasha or Bailey turn on the other, at this point it's like we've been trained.
Yeah, we've literally seen it
anymore.
Twice.
And you didn't –
yeah, it's –
Tyler, you didn't get to hear this, but on commentary, Sasha and Bailey are all smiles. Like, I mean, they're just hamming it up to a ridiculous degree, which is just part of the reason they're not getting cheered is they're just so sappy and their happiness to be in each other's presence. It's just so corny.
Right.
But so that doesn't help. So they don't feel genuine anymore. But Renee goes, how can anyone suggest they wouldn't get along and they're not friends? Look at them. And Corey Graves is like, have you been watching our show for the past year or two? It's called History. And I'm sorry, but they're ruining Renee. Or Renee's ruining herself. I mean, it's some mix of the two. Because you can't say dumb things like that. Everybody at home is thinking what you're thinking, Tyler, which is, they look happy to be together, but if they turn, no one's going to be surprised. People are going to yawn. And Renee's, how can anyone doubt this? It's like, because of what Corey said. So, yeah.
Right.
Did you guys talk last week about the tag thing, tag champions? I don't even think a tag title, if they were the inaugural, women's tag, if they did that at WrestleMania, that was the big culmination. I'm not even sure that would
No, I think that would be a lackluster response if they won.
Yeah, I agree. How did the Natalya Ruby Riott segment work out? And where did Natalya rank in terms of fans being excited to see her? It's pretty early in the show.
So judging by just her entrance, you know, she would rank pretty average. But once she started talking and when she started bringing up, you know, her dad, Jim Neidhart, but then it started getting, you know, a lot more of a reaction. You know, and so in any other situation, sunglasses, like, okay, that's stupid. But, like, because we know, like, okay, those were your father's sunglasses who just died a few weeks ago, like, it actually did get a lot of boos from the crowd. And then when Ruby came out, it was pretty clear-cut, like, boos for everything Ruby Riott said and cheers for Natalya. I was really surprised just because I'm used to going – I've been to a lot of Raws this year, and I'm used to mixed reactions of things not being clear. And tonight, there weren't – there was probably something, but I can't remember anything that was mixed. And that was an example of, like, Ruby was – you know, like, the – you could you – that wasn't like CGI. When she pulled the table off, there was the graphic of Jim on the table and everything.
Yeah,
that was crazy booze when that happened. Like, as soon as she unveiled the thing, it was booze from the entire arena. And then everyone got behind Natty.
Go ahead, Rose.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine anybody at that point not being behind Natty or booing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
What kind of star?
But it wasn't at her entrance, though. It was after they got.
Yeah, for sure. And Ruby had a great line. I'm going to make you guys. I know you were close to your dad. After I put you through this table, you'll be closer than ever. Like, oh my God! What a... I don't know if some guy wrote that for her, but that was a good. Like, you know, they come through sometimes, and that was a good line.
I have not had the chance to talk about Harry's Razors in a while, but they're back as a sponsor of the program. And I'm happy to endorse this product. It is my razor of choice now, and I highly recommend you check it out if you shave. Harry's razors are great. The packaging that they come in, the craftsmanship of what you hold in your hand, the balance, the sense of quality is all important when you're putting something sharp up against your skin. And you want it to feel good and leave your skin feeling good, but also accomplish its task of giving you a clean shave. Harry's does all of that. It's got a smooth, comfortable glide. It just feels right in your hand. Those cheap plastic razors or the imitations out there that try to look fancy and you overpay for don't have the same feel. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know switching razors isn't an easy decision, so they created a trial offer. And you can claim yours by going to harrys.com/pwtorch. That's right, harrys.com/pwtorch to redeem your offer. You can redeem your trial set at harrys.com/pwtorch. You get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, all in pretty cool packaging. And if you end up liking Harry's, well, you can save money in the long run because by selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. So check it out. Go get your free $13 value trial set with everything you need at harrys.com/pwtorch.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
How did Drew hold the audience during his segment, and did he get a big star reaction or a yawn? What kind of reaction?
So Drew, I personally love Drew on the mic. I think he's so good because he doesn't stumble over his words, and his intensity is pretty pretty constant throughout everything he says. Like, yeah. I don't feel like he ever breaks character or struggle. Like, I don't think he struggles with his character. Like, I feel like it's so natural. So when he was talking tonight, it wasn't necessarily as loud, but it's because we were so engaged. Like, yeah, we booed when listening. He said something.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he said something crappy, we booed hard. And then when he was just talking, we were listening. So in that sense, I think it was very, very good. And I was actually surprised, too, then, because then Dolph comes out and, you know, Dolph's last decade and a half, you know, it is what it is. But he actually was getting cheered now, like full on getting cheered during that match as a babyface. And that might have only been just for that match because people really hated Drew. But I was still surprised that even happened.
So clear cut,
you know.
Yeah, good point. How did the crowd react to Elias beating up Little Leo Rush?
It was, people were laughing the whole time in my section. People were just laughing because he was just getting tossed around like a rag doll. So, I mean, I feel like that match was meant to serve that purpose, and it did. But like, it was just funny to hear people laughing. I could tell the people behind me weren't like normal viewers because they're like, "Who's that little guy?" And they were just laughing their heads off. But then the normal wrestling fans around us were also laughing their heads off at Leo getting tossed around. And hats off to Leo for taking that beating, I guess.
Yeah, he's good at it.
There was that one toss where he picked him up and threw him into the turnbuckles. Yeah, and he threw him against 5-6 feet at least. Like,
that was vicious.
Leo took that like a champ. Good for him.
He had no choice.
That's
no,
true.
I mean, he's not. Yeah, Vince is right in the paycheck.
He might not have had a lot to do with it.
No. I mean, he had no physical choice to sell turnbuckle.
Yeah, from the beginning, he had no choice in anything that happened in that match.
Yes,
real life or otherwise.
Earlier, with the, I want to talk about the tag title change. They showed.
Oh, that was awesome.
Did they only show the still shot? Did I miss something? Did they only show the still shot of Drake Maverick being thrown over? They said during the commercial, Bobby Roode and
Chad Gable.
What's his face? Chad Gable threw him over the top rope onto AOP, but they never. I don't think they showed on the replay like this. I think it
happened before the break.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm not paying attention. I was, you know, being a virtual cowboy.
I assumed that wasn't during break because I don't know why you would have a spot like that during break.
Yeah, that's what I was going to. So after the commercial, I must have saw the replay and assumed just got tied up and they assumed it happened during the break.
Yeah, they threw him out of LP right before the break. I mean, you would have looked away and you would have missed it. So,
cool.
I mean, it was
quick. Yeah. But the match itself, how you said it was awesome. I think.
Let me take that back. The match was fun, and when I say that was awesome, that's my gut reaction to anytime I get to see a title change live, and I'm there for a title change. That's kind of a big deal. But I was thinking to myself, wait a minute. So they made this a handicap tag match so that they could take the belts off and then AOP wouldn't have to take the pin, obviously. I mean, that's why Maverick took the pin. But then it's like, what does that say about AOP, though? Like, I don't... There's a little bit of weirdness around that.
What it says is Bobby Roode and Chad Gable are your new tag team champions because they beat a manager. They should have nobody who's a fan of that team should have any pride in what they accomplished. The idea that WWE announcers and we're selling this as a disadvantage because it's a 3-on-2 match is preposterous. It doesn't make any sense because when you add a weak link to that situation and it's 1-on-1, it's not tornado rules. Then if Drake's in the match, it's an advantage for Roode and Gable, just as it would be. You know, like, it's not an advantage if I'm in a UFC octagon fight in a 2-on-1, because when I get tagged in, I'm going to get destroyed. That's not unfair to the opponent. It's unfair to my partner.
Yeah. Well,
okay, let me disagree with all of this. This is like classic Jim Cornette in a six-man so he can take the pin, or Gary Hart.
But not for a tag
title. Okay, fine. But the idea that it's a disadvantage adding a third person, even if it's a half a person, 2.5 is better than on 2.5 on 2 is better than 2 on 2 as far as odds and what that guy can do. Just be, don't tag in. You can still cause damage, go around and pull a guy off the mat when there a hot tag is about to occur, or off the apron when a hot tag. You don't have to be in the match because, yes, you should get – you should get beat up until you're a heel and you get cocky and you tag yourself in and it works the first time and you dance around and you hit your poses and you run out and you tag the big guy in and he comes in. But late in the match, yeah.
There are examples in history of it being done well. Mm-hmm. And it's not done well when it's an idea that they had today with no buildup, with the heel manager they've done no character development for, okay, with no backstory, and they put him in the ring, and they sell it to us as a disadvantage that Gable and Roode are going to have a chance to actually pin Drake Maverick to win the tag titles instead of the monsters that are AOP. So to me, you're right. Yeah. You can create a I believe a manager, most managers should be scared to death to ever have to be in a match. And it should be against their will that they're ever in a match because they should be scared. But I get what, but if you book it right – and you tell the story and you create that foundation where, okay, Drake's getting cocky, I can't wait to see him get showing up, that's fine. You build that up for 2 or 3 weeks and you let fans think about what could backfire. And you have Drake tell that story of, I'm not going to tag in until it's time to pin you guys. And when my AOP take care of you, I'm going to humiliate you and I'm going to pin you. And you tell that story. And they didn't tell that story. And so now Gable and Roode are celebrating as tag champions because they beat Drake Maverick. That's emasculating to them. So I hated it. I thought it was just so – it's just so short-sighted. They're not thinking this stuff through. They're taking a derivative version of something that was well done in decades past and poorly done at times too. Not everything in the past was well done. But they're doing ideas without that depth of detail that made it work the first time someone thought of doing it and the second and third time and fourth and fifth time that someone else did it because it worked. And they're leaving all the details out and they're just throwing the concept out there without any internal logic to it. And so I think there's not a weaker way to become tag champs than pinning a manager. I just think it's not a momentum builder.
Yeah, my thought was Chad Gable to me was always a cornball, right? Yeah. Like this cornball as to like whatever. But he was always like kind of a lovable cornball guy that you would, you know, wouldn't mind having around, especially when he was with Jason Jordan, like a couple of corny dudes, you know, have, you know, that get along, that's fine, endearing tag team. But now he's just, it has been since he's gotten with Bobby Roode, but he's celebrating and they're doing the backstage stuff. And I just was like, now he's just not a lovable cornball. He's just a flat out cornball that I don't care about anymore. Like tag title or not. Like now. I didn't think about it too much as far as like being emasculating. Like, hey, they got a pin that was in the rules. They pinned the manager.
Well, they should have been the ones to outsmart. They should have lured Drake into their trap. Like, this shouldn't have been, oh, it's a disadvantage. What's Baron Corbin up to? This is unfair. That's ridiculous. What it should have been is, you know, something where they again, you tell the story for 2 or 3 weeks and you add the layers in detail and it can be fun. And you have you lure Drake into the trap and take advantage of his cockiness and thinking he's tough because he's got AOP by his side. And then it backfires. And they didn't tell that story. So the satisfaction was reduced and the logic was non-existent.
Yeah, we've done that thing where we put more thought and stuff into it here in 5 minutes, 10 minutes than they probably did.
And this is stuff Vince doesn't think about or can't think about anymore at the stage that he's at. And the writers are just collecting paychecks, or they're not. I'm trying to be nice. They're not seasoned enough to even know that this stuff was once well done. And you know, like there's things that worked in wrestling that you can't just copy, but leave out all the things that made it work and then have it end up working. And
you made a great point with that. Like, yeah, they didn't build it up. They didn't, like when Cornette or Gary Hart or somebody did it, it was, you're just because it's been done right doesn't make, because, yeah, no, you countered that very perfectly. Yeah.
So Tyler, we also had, let me try to remember where we were. Oh yeah, you brought up the tag match. Oh, the Ember Moon. They hyped throughout the show. Face off, Nia Jax, Ronda Rousey, and I'm like, good, we're gonna have a Ronda Rousey promo to make fun of again. And she's like, I'm not here to strike poses or talk. And then she just stood at ringside for the surprise bonus match of Tamina versus Ember Moon. How did that go over with the crowd? That was a loaded question, by the way.
It was funny because we found out, I think, when you guys found out, because it was clear when we went to commercial break because the lights went off and we got, you know, video packages in the arena. And then when they came back, this is like, we saw the same promo, everything. And then they come back from commercial break and we heard JoJo say, as per Alexa Bliss, Ember Moon versus Tamina, one-on-one, you know, and it was like, oh, okay. So the as per Alexa Bliss, it's not like Alexa made an announcement to us during the break. It was just like, okay, well, I guess here we go. And that's when everyone got up. There were other points where people got up for the bathroom, but that was like, everyone was like, yeah, this is the intentional throwaway bathroom break match because no one cared, which sucks because I love Ember Moon like a lot. And I'm right. Like, I don't care about this. I don't care about Tamina. Tamina's boring to me.
Yeah.
What is Ember Moon? Is she like a cosplay werewolf lady? Like what?
Oh, okay. You're asking me like what she is, what her character
what is?
She? I guess. Yeah, she's got like a, I guess she's got like this Twilight vampire look going, I guess, but I don't know. I just love watching her in the ring and when she does her entrances. This is my personal opinion.
I just love her when
she does her entrance and all of her poses and her like her facial expressions of the character, like she is that character, whatever it is.
So there's all these,
you know, Twilight vampire kid, but she's in it 100%. And then she goes in the ring and I watch her and I'm like, these are really awesome. Cool. Like her finisher is awesome. Like right. It's just cool to watch. So
did you like her as Athena? Like, were you a fan then, or is she new?
I didn't watch her much then, so I can't really speak to that. I'm aware of it. But as Ember Moon, I do love her. So I kind of want to go back and watch some of that stuff, but I haven't yet.
We need Vince to, like, understand who these characters are and then reintroduce them or introduce them to the larger audience. And he needs to understand what they're about so he can do something with them. You know, I mean,
well, they didn't do a great job in NXT. It's not like she had this whole history in NXT of being this well-defined kind of.
But you know,
who is Ember Moon? She's a werewolf cosplay chick.
He needs to ask that, or someone needs to ask that, and they need to communicate that anytime they introduce a new act. You know, like they're doing with Lars Sullivan. So
yeah.
Okay, Tyler, just a couple more things here. Was there anything before Raw went on the air?
There was two matches from main events. The first one was singles. It was Mojo Rawley versus Tyler Breeze, because, yeah, so I think they're bringing him, they're starting to ease him back in, I guess. I'm hoping anyway.
Being on main event is not being eased back in.
Where'd he go? Why was he injured?
I guess.
Why does he need to be eased back in?
He's been on dark match. He's been on main events and dark matches for weeks. So
yeah, he's been off TV. But so you say main event isn't to be eased back in, but I did see Mike Kanellis last time we spoke, Wade, in San Diego, and here he is now on 205 Live as like one of the bigger acts on 205 Live. So.
Yeah.
So you never know. You never know. But anyway, so Rawley came out, which was unexpected. I was like, oh, he's on. This is awesome. Like, at least I get to see someone I haven't seen in a while. And he was definitely heel. His trunks were, he was all black trunks, same type of gear, like same type of trunks and knee pads and everything, but everything was black. So, which seemed intentional. And then Tyler Breeze came out and it was a pretty straight, like house show style match, for main event. And yeah. And then I believe, Tyler won with a roll up. They didn't even do a finisher, which was kind of funny because I'm like, if you're bringing back Mojo, wouldn't you want to make him look good in this match by having it be a little bit more of a contest, or at least have, if Breeze is going to win, have him win with like a big move? Like he literally rolled him up.
Wow.
He was standing up and then he rolled him up and then 1-2-3 clean.
And then what else on main event?
Then it was my least favorite of all things on the planet, six-man tag. It was Hawkins and Ascension versus the Lucha House Party. And Lucha House Party was working face, I guess, during that match.
Why is there a question?
They were working face during that match, but I've seen Lucha House Party recently at other shows, and I feel like that I don't watch enough of 205 Live regularly to, I guess, be an authority on this, but I feel like when I watch Lucha House Party, they're all goofing off and there's always some sort of shenanigan. Like it's not like straight heel, but like they kind of fiddle around with cheating, not quite. Does that make sense? And like I said, I don't watch
the. Is it because of the rules of those Lucha House Party, man?
The Lucha House Party rules. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's in the rules. They can be. It's like.
I guess. Not
cheating if everybody can be in the ring and doing stuff at the same time.
The kids love it.
Right. That's like the big colorful, goofy act with pinatas and that. I don't think. Question at their baby faces, like.
and then
there gets the ascension.
But it's just not my cup of tea.
Heard Hawkins. I totally get that, but yeah. Like idea that they was like, yeah, I think they were working baby face. Like what?
Like I guess they're maybe baby face in the way that like Chavo Guerrero was baby face when he was going against Uncle Eddie. That maybe like kind of goofy, but. Anyway, so they were the baby faces. It's just not my favorite. I don't like Lucha House Parties that much.
Yeah, I don't like them at all. I get you, but
thank you.
So Tyler, anything else from the show before we ask you about what you paid for your ticket? Where you sat?
Let's see here. I don't know. I was just surprised in general, like I said, about the fact that as much as Raw. Here's the positives on Raw that I think are notable. One, that opening segment with Seth and Baron didn't go 15 minutes too long, at least, and it didn't feel like it did.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to 3 or 4 Raws this year, and they always go way too long. The last Raw I was at was the one before or the one after Survivor Series. And it was like 35 minutes in and we were just barely through the first match. This was like an awesome promo between, back and forth between Seth and Baron. So that was good and notable. The crowd wasn't bored by the time they announced the match that they were going to go at it later that night. People were into it still and people weren't falling asleep. And then in general, I feel like the baby faces and the heels weren't mixed reactions.
Okay.
Now, decisions on who won, like the title change with the tag titles, that wasn't a great decision on the finish of the match, but people were booing and cheering for the most part in line with what I feel like they should have, which is different for Raw. That is not what has happened lately.
Yeah.
I've been to enough Raws where it was surprising.
Yeah, so they align people that they like with babyface roles and people and characters that fans are willing to boo with and match them up with heels. And that's an accomplishment for WWE relative to what you've seen.
Yes. Oh, and one other thing. I love this, but then part of me doesn't know how I think about this, was that Seth called out how much Raw sucked. And obviously Baron and his role on TV as general manager blamed it all on Baron. So I like that Seth called out how, like, it's funny because on all the podcasts, yours and everyone else's, people have been talking about the piss, you know, gimmick is like, what is this? And Seth even called it out as like stupid.
But Tyler, in the structure of Raw, as they tell their story, was Baron Corbin in charge of Drake Maverick peeing his pants when he got scared and commandeering the rope and peeing on it? I mean, that makes no sense.
Well, that's where it started to make no sense, like I said. I like that Seth called out Raw having sucked lately. That was good because it's like, yes, you've acknowledged to the fans that what they think is, or it's good in the sense that you've acknowledged to the fans that what they think is valid. But then, I don't know, like. Exactly, like you said, like, was Baron acted? In the universe of WWE, if it's real, did Baron tell him?
Tyler, here's my pushback to what you just said. If the show sucks, make it better starting now instead of talking on the air about how much you suck, how what a terrible job you've done. But we're going to try to co-opt that into a storyline that makes no sense. We're trying to get heat on the heel because Vince McMahon and his writing team have driven away hundreds of thousands of viewers with awful television and overexposing the guy that you're now trying to get heat on once again. And granted, he had a nice main event match tonight. But like, just start writing good shows. Let's stop talking about how we suck and blaming a heel in ways that the heel has nothing within the storyline structure to do with. And instead, just write a good show. Like, stop. Don't acknowledge how bad the show is. Because no one's gonna have sympathy for. Oh, well, like you're saying. Well, they're telling us we know we're bad. I'm like, I have a better idea. Just write a good show. Just start bringing people up who we care about, and write finishes. You know, book finishes that matter. Build up matches in a way where we care. Like, So I just don't want to give them points for saying, oh yeah, you're right, we suck, but we're going to try to blame it on Corbin in a way that makes so little sense that it just underlines that we don't know what we're doing.
Right. No, I agree with that. Like, so, like I said, there's a small part of me that's like, okay, Seth is acknowledging this,
yeah.
But that's where I felt weird. What you just said is why I felt weird about it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So the crowd actually, what was funny is the crowd actually popped for it. As soon as he said, like, however he phrased it, like Raw has sucked lately or whatever, people cheered, which is great. Sort of good for Seth, but at the same time, it's like you should, like in the back in Gorilla, you should not be proud of
it's not good for anybody.
The fact
no,
that
no,
those,
here,
yeah.
Seth can say, Baron Corbin, you're making a mockery of the decisions that you're making is undermining why we're all here. We're all here to figure out who the best wrestler is, and the deserving wrestler should be getting title shots. And when we battle in the ring, there should be a one-on-one match without outside interference. We can figure out who the better wrestler is. Like, it's okay to say that, because that is actually at the core of what this presentation of this product is all about. And it's not a show about nothing. It's not a show about putting smiles on people's faces. At the core, NYPD Blue was a show about cops putting bad guys in jail. It wasn't about actors having emotional scenes that made people. What are you laughing because it's a 90s reference, Travis? Or what do you?
I mean, you had to reach back so far.
Yeah,
I actually used to watch NYPD Blue with my parents. So.
It's our demo, Travis. It's our demo.
I did too.
R.I.P. Steven Blackshear.
I'm a child.
I don't watch primetime TV anymore. So
you could have said Law and Order. That's more current, Wade.
Law and Order is about detectives arresting people, and then the second half of the show, or no, cops arresting people, and the second half of the show, lawyers convicting or trying to get a jury. Okay. So my point is, it's WWE is a TV show about wrestlers fighting to win titles. Seth shouldn't come out there and talk about the writing sucks. Yeah, I'm going to do this anyway, Travis. You wouldn't tune into NYPD Blue when they're halfway into a season with bad ratings and have one of the detectives say, you know, the reason that things aren't going well around here, this show has sucked lately, is because the writers have done a bad job casting villains. Like, you just don't do that in the middle of a show. So Seth can acknowledge the show has sucked, but do so in a more sophisticated way where you're saying, Baron, you're making a mockery of things. Matches, you can't just, you're making all these arbitrary decisions that's undermining the idea that the best wrestlers are the ones who are going to win matches. Like, there's a way to put some thought into that and make it work.
Yeah, so. And no Monday Night Football announced team would say, yeah, my ratings are down this year. It's a lot of reasons, you know, if you don't want to do, you know, episode, you know, TV, you know, scripted TV to Raw and do like, well, they're simulated sports. So what do sports do? They would, any league would be like, what are you doing? That announcer is getting pulled off of, you know, into meetings. Like, don't talk about how bad the ratings are unless we have a way to, or matter of fact, just shut up. Just talk about the game. That would be frowned upon. And if he did it again or she did it again, it would be a major problems.
Tyler, what'd you pay for your ticket? Where'd you sit? Were you happy with it?
Okay, yeah. So I got my tickets the cheapest I've ever gotten them this time. I got them after fees, $25 each. I got two, one for me, one for my roommate. And we were on the lower bowl, six rows up. So six rows from being on the floor, facing the stage just a little bit to the left of it. So it was really good.
For
really
$25?
For
bucks?
Wow.
Yeah, and actually today the prices went down. But today they were up for as low as $15. So it's already a small house. So I feel like San Diego, it was the same way last time I was there. So I feel like San Diego must just not be a big draw. I don't know.
Or maybe Seth is right.
Maybe Seth is right. And then I did have, before I go away, I did have one other comment to make. You emailed me after you asked me if I was available tonight. And said, whatever you do, don't talk about the Vikings game. And I'm not going to. But I just thought that was a funny coincidence because I grew up in Minnesota, in Detroit Lakes.
Yeah.
So Adam Thielen, he's younger than me, but he did go to the same – I went to Detroit Lakes High School where Adam Thielen went. And my parents live in Indiana now, but every Sunday, that's their date day. They go to church, and then they throw on their matching Thielen's jerseys, and they go watch Vikings together.
Oh, so that's cool.
Any other Sunday, I would have known it, and I might have brought it up.
So. Yes. I'm always paranoid when that's coinciding with doing a live show here, or, you know, talking to people right after the game or when it's ending.
Oh, I won't ruin it for you.
I've only been to Detroit Lakes once, but it looked like a cool town. I think it would be a cool kind of community to grow up in.
It's a big tourist spot. Lots of people have lake homes there.
Yep.
There's a little known fact. In Detroit Lakes, among farm town, I think there's 415 lakes-ish within the city limits. That's how many lakes there are there. Yeah. It's crazy.
Land of 10,000 lakes, Minnesota, and Detroit Lakes, one of the hotspots there. All right, Tyler, thanks. Maybe we'll talk to you next time there in San Diego. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this was fun. Thanks, Wade. Have a great night.
Yeah, fun talk. All right, we're back for the mailbag segment. And let's begin with an email that was sent in halfway into the show with Stephen C. He says, I'm at a loss for words. I write this halfway through tonight's live episode. I can only describe what I've witnessed thus far under the guidelines for a multiple choice questionnaire for the Torch. Is WWE truly trying to correct a ratings issue? Has WWE literally been listening to Keller Wisdom on his podcast the last couple of weeks, where it feels so far they mentioned every criticism in order you and your team have preached about in order? C, has WWE listened to all the criticisms, low ratings, general complaints, etc., and have chosen to make fun of its fan base's intelligence by directly mentioning it all on the air live? Or D, all of the above? No matter the answer you give, I look forward to listening to your podcast on my way to work in the morning more than ever after this episode. I mean, if that Seth promo, and I guess a little bit sprinkled here and there otherwise in commentary, was a way to say, okay, we kind of know, you know, we're acknowledging, and, you know, give us a few weeks. We got to get through Christmas and New Year's because those are going to be phone, you know, pre-taped shows and, you know, whatever. By the way, they should work hard to deliver on those shows, because that's when casual fans who have tuned out are sometimes hanging out with their family, and or their, you know, if groups get together with their families get together, and somebody might say, hey, let's turn on WWE, and someone says, oh, I haven't watched in a while. That's a chance to win some people back who they're out of their routine and they would never watch you otherwise. So I think WWE should, you know, try to do a good job of those shows, but.
But it might get out. The results of that show will get on the internet, Wade.
All the more reason they should make it a hell of a show, so people go, I got to tune in to see that. If I hear a movie's great, I'm going to go see the movie, not go to it. Because
people go, Rotten Tomatoes, 100%, the new Spider-Verse thing. Like, I think that's going to make people go, oh, well, everybody else likes it? I think, you know, not, oh, everybody's seen it. I don't
know. Or it already happened?
Yeah.
You know, what? It did cross my mind that they were sort of like the criticisms they were acknowledging, as much as I disagree with the framing of it. I was like, wow, this is kind of like bullet points of what I've been talking about and callers and co-hosts have been venting about. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say about that other than, yeah, I mean, that did cross my mind, Stephen. All right. Let's see. What is up next?
But it is insulting when they acknowledge and then still do the... still do the things.
Like, Baron Corbin, you're the reason Raw's ratings are going downhill. Baron Corbin, in a 30-minute main event. I mean, it was good, but, like, it is a little ironic, you know. All right. VIP member Chris Fielder, baby, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, says, hey, guys, tonight on Raw, Seth Rollins basically ran down every bad thing that's been happening on Raw for the past month. Do you think it's a smart move to air those grievances on live television when most of us are well aware that it's actually not Baron Corbin, but Vince McMahon, rewriting shows last minute that's led to the declining ratings and so forth? To me, it's like saying SmackDown is a B show. It should never be done. I'm just wondering what they're expecting to get out of this. I guess at the very least you can say Vince realizes his show has totally sucked lately. Maybe that's a good thing. What do you think? So, I know we talked about that a lot, but I'm just reading Chris's email because it does kind of acknowledge what we've been talking about, that other people picked up on that Travis set.
Yeah, and tomorrow or Wednesday, they'll be like, now everybody's criticizing us for talking about it. Like, we can't win. And not to bring that man into every aspect of my life, but that's like totally like a Trump thing. Like, no, now the media says I can't do this. You know, like how he did. Like, now they're complaining that we acknowledged on TV. Like, what do they want from us? Like, simple. Like, Wade said earlier, like, write a good show. Like, then you'll get praised. Like, simple as that.
Yeah. Don't talk to your spouse about what a bad partner you are. Just, like, actually just be a good partner for about a week or two without talking about it and drawing attention to it. And then you're like, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. You know, and then you can apologize for being bad after that. But be good before you start acknowledging how bad you are. That makes it, in a way, it makes it worse. Like, you're self-aware and you're still doing all this crap? All right. Philip from D.C. Am I the only one that heard JoJo calling Ginger Mahal? No, that was Bruce. That might have been my favorite part of the show. But what do you make of Roode and Gable winning the belts? Is this the start of an actual push? No, they beat a manager. Because it wasn't more than a few weeks ago that Roode and Gable were losing matches to the Ascension. Right, because they couldn't beat up a manager. Could this be the excuse for Roode to turn on Gable when they lose the belts? I'd prefer to see Roode should turn on Gable in 3 years. Stop teaming people and then immediately plotting when they're going to break up. Stop doing that, everybody. Okay, I'm just mini rants in the middle of this. I would prefer to see Rude turn because his work has been largely underwhelming since his call up, and a heel turn might give him a renewed spark so he can be the arrogant guy he was on NXT. Also, why am I to believe that Apollo weekly launching Sasha is enough to take out Jinder and the Singh brothers? Or am I just nitpicking? Anyway, thanks for all the incredible content, and everyone go VIP. Like, I've never made a turnover in my life, but my understanding is you have to leave them in the oven for a certain amount of time or a pop. What are they? Is it a turnover? Is that what it's called? Or a pop?
Apple turnover or something?
I don't know. Like the muffins that like pop up out of the muffin. I don't even know what they're called, much less made them.
Muffins?
Well, yes.
Cupcakes?
No, there's like some sort of muffin that like that people use it as an example all the time that I'm forgetting about. Like you have to leave it in the oven or else it doesn't – like there's eggs in them and they like –
Soufflé?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, maybe soufflé works. You have to leave it in for enough time for it to like – for it to happen. And for it to work, like you've got to keep teams together long enough so when there's a breakup, people care. And you have to make it so the team is an institution and they've accomplished a lot. And there has to be a stretch of like 9 or 12 or 15 months where you can't imagine them breaking up because they're so in sync. And then you start thinking about when in the next year to break them up. You don't start thinking about breaking them up a month after they get together or 2 months after they get together because you don't – the souffle doesn't – whatever. So my food analogy is falling apart here, but so would a souffle if you took it out of the oven too soon.
It's never built.
So, yeah, I think Rude is better off as a heel, but I'm ranting against the idea that, you know, unless they're bookend tag teams, like nobody thinks AOP is going to break up or the Ascension because they look the same, you know, but like if you don't look the same, if you're not a bookend tag team, then everybody's just plotting when they should break them up. It's like, no, stop doing that. Just commit long term. All right. I'm glad that Apollo asked Sasha if he could grab her crotch and lift her into the air before he did it. I think that was good of him.
I missed that.
He's like, can I pick you up? Or no, Sasha said, Apollo, pick me up and throw me onto Apollo and the Singh brothers. And I think it's good Sasha told him to do it because it is kind of like where his hand is. It's not really go without permission, even if it's a wrestling thing. So I think that's why
if you're a star and they let you do it.
Yes, yes. So yeah, the imagery there was such rude. The woman should have definitely, it should be her idea with permission. And I think that's nitpicking a little. I mean, I guess, you know, it's a human body being thrown at three people. I mean, it's cartoonish because everything Jinder and the Singh brothers do is cartoonish. And that's a
former WWE champion, Jinder Mahal.
By the way, you can improve Raw by getting, and I hate saying this about people who are earning a living and he works so hard and all, good attitude, all that. But you can make Raw better by subtracting the Singh brothers and Jinder and bringing in almost anybody from anywhere else in the world. Like in the NXT, just, it's, wow. But you can, like that's the thing. Like,
totally.
There comes a point where like a character is just dragging things down. There's nothing you can do with him. He's been to the top. Nobody cared. Now he's done this weird meditation thing that's supposed to make him a heel that only Vince McMahon thinks is heelish, and because it's some other culture and millennials that I don't know what he's thinking. And his matches aren't good. His promos aren't good. The Singh Brothers sidekicks are just copying what Drake Maverick's doing. Now it's duplicitous. Just grab almost anybody from NXT, bring in the main roster, add some fresh blood, and move Jinder to 205 Live to be like a manager. I don't care, but like, there's easy ways to improve Raw. They have this deep roster full of people and a world out there. And they have money. Like, all the money they need. They could hire anybody. And that's who they're putting on television.
I was actually literally thinking about the Jinder Mahal character a day or two ago, thinking how he could have been the wrestling version of Jim Cornette, his early, you know, Mama Cornette, you know, Mama Cornette paid for everything. Oh, wow. Like, yeah, yeah. Like, I looked at him as – he could have been the tough guy version of Raj from Big Bang Theory, where he's just completely dependent on his parents and he needs daddy's money, and except he'll punch you in the face. And, you know, I thought they missed when they initially, you know, turned him and pushed him to the top. Like if he was kind of a spoiled, it would have made a lot more sense. I thought
totally
in the moment,
like
with that
his
character,
his gimmick didn't have to be all about just because he's got, he's from Canada, but just because he's quote from India doesn't have to be his gimmick. Like you can actually have someone who's not a Caucasian person of European descent and actually have a gimmick that isn't just focused exclusively on the fact that they came from this exotic place as Vince sees it. It's like, no, he can actually be what Kona Reeves is, only the finest things combined with, like you said, Jim Cornette, everything handed to him on a silver platter, and you could turn that into something. And
And daddy's money comes from, you know, their indie tea company or something. I don't know, whatever you, you know, wanted, if you got to get your stereotypes in. But that could have been, you know, he comes from, you know, Indian money, East Indian money, whatever kind of thing they could have had. But now he's right. But yes, I made my point.
Yeah. Very good. All right. John M., VIP member, Ripon, California, says, hey, Wayne and Travis, two questions about Drew McIntyre. Do you think him taking out Finn last week will lead to the Demon appearing at TLC? I'll be going to TLC this Sunday and would love to see that in person. I think it's set up perfect for it, but I can't see Vince McMahon and creative wanting to beat Drew again. But also, the only good thing they've done with Finn is protect the Demon. He hasn't lost as the Demon on the main roster and only one loss in NXT. So maybe it's a way to get Finn a win, or could they want to give Drew the win over Demon? Would like your thoughts on this. Second, Drew dropped The Undertaker's name tonight in his promo. Is this the first seed planted for a Mania match? Maybe it's a second seed. I could definitely see Drew Undertaker as a way to give Drew a rub by having a match Taker, win or lose. That would be a prominent spot for him. But it was about streaks, and it's a natural thing to bring up otherwise. It didn't seem out of left field. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but I also wouldn't exclude that as a possibility. Travis, your thoughts on that and the Demon character and the conundrum of the finish?
Yeah, I'm hoping to never see another Undertaker match, so I don't care who it's against. So yeah, no,
there is that.
But as far as the Finn, I don't think it's time for the Demon. I think I don't see it as set up as perfectly as you do. I thought the way they did it against Corbin a few months ago, I think it was SummerSlam maybe, where he came in, got in, got out. You got to see the Demon, and he got the win in his, you know, quick fashion. I don't want to see the Demon lose, and I definitely don't want to see – I should say I don't want to see McIntyre lose at this point, and I definitely don't want to see
– Yeah, that's a conundrum.
Demon.
I think they should say I get what John's saying, and I know he's got, you know, kind of the self-interest in it, but I think if you can't do a clean finish, and they shouldn't do either clean finish, Drew shouldn't lose again, and – The demon should lose. So, yeah, tough situation. So I guess I would save it.
And
for
it's
Mania.
A TFC. It's a, you know, gimmick situation. So you can keep Finn, you can protect Finn with the finish.
Right.
There's creative ways to do that. As Finn Balor losing to Drew McIntyre. There's a million ways to do that. But I don't think there's any good way to have Drew beat. Demon. No matter how you do it.
Yeah. All right. Zach in Texas says, under the impression Vince McMahon lived in the combined motto of if you ignore criticism, it doesn't exist. And if you acknowledge it, it gives the critics power. So how on earth did this episode of Raw make air? Not only was it more self-reflective than any Raw I can remember, but they outright acknowledged the bad ratings and Baron Corbin's role in it. No, they didn't. They made up things that Baron Corbin wasn't responsible for. I waited till the end of the show to send this email because I was fully expecting a server in Corbin to walk out with the Intercontinental title belt as a metaphorical middle finger to Vince from Vince, but it didn't happen. The one place where they were still a little tone deaf was putting the mic back in Nia Jax's hand. No, she was all right. The promo was okay. The promo wasn't as bad as her last one, which isn't saying much. I was okay with that one. But what was with the random and unnecessary scream? Yeah, that can go away, by the way. Overmodulating like that is never a good thing in any character, and it's a really amateur hour to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Eric G, VIP from Charlotte. VIP member, correct me if I'm wrong, but did Rollins win the match tonight with no referee to call the bell? I saw Heath Slater get taken out, but I didn't see another official run of the ring call the finish, meaning the match just ended without anybody with power to stop a match declaring it over. Yes, Rollins clearly won based on the rules, but if the timekeeper, ring announcer, and arena music engineer can all coordinate a winner in a ladder match, why did we ever need a referee in the 25-plus year history of this stipulation? This is definitely a this-happened-because-it-was-written-in-the-script moment, and it's stuff like this why I can't watch more than 20 to 30 minutes total of Raw each week. Have a good show. So there's someone backing up what I was saying. Write better shows, and then you'll have people who care about this stuff. Let's see. Somebody emailed and just said Seth Rollins' new merch and didn't ask. Okay. Yeah, that's weird. What do the letters stand for? Seth freaking Rollins, and what does the N stand for? So it's Seth. The S in the R on the right, on the left and right, is Seth Rollins, and then above and below the X, it's Effin, as in Effin.
Yeah.
So, it took me a little while too. So, don't feel bad M something. I can't tell what your nickname is in your email. So anyway, but yeah, if you wear that t-shirt, people will be like, huh? And you have to explain it to them. So be prepared. Okay. That's it. We'll end on that note, Travis. Thank you. Good conversation. Anything we left off that you want to talk about?
No, we covered so much in that correspondent segment. Like we even got to, you know, Bailey and Apollo Crews. So,
and I fit in. I think the over under on my rants is, even if they were really short, is like 12. So that'd be my guess. I had like 12 rants on the show. Do you think it's more or less than that? More.
I'm going under.
Going under? Okay.
Well, maybe because what I consider a rant is a high threshold.
That's true. I guess an aside while reading an email is hardly a rant, but rants and asides, then I'm over 12. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Travis. Check out Travis Bryant every week for 6 to 12 hours. It's called the PW Torch East Coast Cast, and it covers professional wrestling and a lot more. Go to eastcoastcast.com or search PW Torch or East Coast Cast in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe. And if you can fill a work day with it, right?
Yeah, and then some.
And how can people follow you on social media, Travis?
You can find me at TrabLord. You can find the brand at East Coast Cast.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Wade.
If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways. But that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller post shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all 7 PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it, pwtorchvipinfo.com.